Chances are, at some point this holiday season, you will encounter a scene on a greeting card or on television or even on the streets of downtown Denver that seems to come from Victorian England.
We are the original Dickens carolers.
Accept no substitutes.
How about Ding Dong Merrily on High?
Oh, and Ding Dong
Merrily on High.
Ding dong merrily on high, in heaven the bells are ringing.
Well, my name is Michelle Wolf Paul, and we are the original Dickens Carolers. We're a 26-year-old, well, we like to think institution, here in Denver. We have typical Victorian costumes, a little bit more bright and colorful than maybe back then. Back then, it was a pretty drab and dreary and dirty place in London. Not terribly festive. A time of hard work for a lot of the poor people, and they just couldn't afford the luxury of celebrating Christmas. So we are ever so thankful for Mr. Dickens' stories to really bring Christmas back for all of us.
Hosanna in the Chelsea.
Gloria!
2012 marked the 100th anniversary of the birth of Charles Dickens. Born in Portsmouth, England, on February 7th, 1812. But this month may be when you really feel his influence the most, thanks to folks like the original Dickens carolers, yes, but also thanks to a philosophy Dickens worked to spread during his lifetime. He called it his carol philosophy, and it came straight out of one of his most popular works. This hour, we'll explore Charles Dickens and the spirit of Christmas with insights and readings from the cast and crew of a theatrical production of A Christmas Carol happening in Aurora, Colorado this year at the Aurora Fox Theater. We'll also hear music and carols from Dickens' time through the hour, and we'll start with this. It's a carol with lyrics composed by English composer George Ratcliffe Woodward, born 1848, Ding Dong Merrily on High.
Ding Dong Merrily on High.
The Firesign Vocal Quartet singing an English carol, Ding Dong Merrily on High. I'm John Pinno, and you're listening to Charles Dickens and the Spirit of Christmas from Colorado Public Radio. A stroll through Dickens' life and his most famous Christmas story with some expert assistance this hour.
I'm Charles Packard, executive producer at the Aurora Fox, and although I don't typically direct, I can't keep my hands off A Christmas Carol.
As it happens, Charles is directing the production of A Christmas Carol in Aurora this year. We're privileged to have the cast of this production along as well to share scenes from the story. And this hour, we'll also hear from another person who can tell us quite a lot about Charles Dickens' life and times.
My name is Brenda Rittenauer, and I am not a Dickens scholar, but I am working as the dramaturg for the Aurora Fox's production of A Christmas Carol. So I had the great pleasure of digging into the deep, dark pit of London that is this story.
The deep, dark pit of London. With no further ado, let's dive in.
Dickens wrote A Christmas Carol in 1843, and he wrote it in a matter of weeks. He got the idea to write it in early October, and he published it the week before Christmas.
The opening paragraphs in the book are just amazing.
On Christmas Eve, old Scrooge sat busy in his counting house. It was cold, bleak, biting weather. The fog came pouring in at every chink and keyhole.
A Merry Christmas, Uncle. God save you.
Ah, humbug.
Really, the plot begins with getting to know Scrooge and what type of person Scrooge is. Dickens is way better at describing it than me. but to me, he was a warm, feeling, happy person in his youth. And in bits and pieces, he lost that. So the book begins with getting to know Scrooge, and we arrive at the counting house.
God rest ye merry gentlemen, let nothing you dismay.
Away with the lot of you! I'll not have you begging at my door! You'll want all day tomorrow, I suppose, Bob Cratchit?
If quite convenient, sir.
It's not convenient, and it's not fair. If I was to stop you half a crown for it, you'd think yourself ill-used, I'll wager. And yet you don't think me ill-used when I pay a day's wages for no work.
It's only once a year, Mr. Scrooge.
Well, a poor excuse for picking a man's pocket every 25th of December. But I suppose you must have the whole day. Be here all the earlier the next morning.
Yes, sir, I will, sir. Thank you, sir. And Merry Christmas, Mr. Scrooge.
Ah, humbug.
If you know anything about Dickens, you know that he likes to write about what he was seeing as the class struggles of London. So in A Christmas Carol, you see Scrooge walk home from work, and he literally is tripping over poor people on his way home from work. That is how it was. There was no separation of the people. And that's one of the reasons why Dickens was so appalled that the rich could so handily ignore the poor people, because they literally were at their doorstep.
The way I understand Victorian England at the time is that Christmas had lost some of its spirit, and certainly there was a lot of political upheaval at the time when Dickens wrote it, and much of the story is directly addressing the political movements of the time. But he also put the heart back into Christmas and the true meaning of Christmas, and he tied it to his desire for the society to be more charitable.
There's another key component of the story that we'll get to after a set of Christmas carols, starting with one that is in fact mentioned in Dickens' story, God Rest Ye, or God Rest You, Merry Gentlemen.
God rest you, merry gentlemen, let nothing you dismay. Remember Christ our Savior was born on Christmas Day.
A set of Christmas carols from England. Deck the Halls, before that, the Wassail Song, and we started the set with a carol published 10 years before Charles Dickens published A Christmas Carol, God Rest Ye Merry Gentlemen. You're listening to Charles Dickens and the Spirit of Christmas from Colorado Public Radio. We started our walkthrough of Dickens' Christmas Carol with an understanding of two issues Dickens hoped to address in his story. Here again is Brenda Rittenour.
For Dickens, part of the purpose of this story was to get back in touch with the spirit of Christmas. And to him, the spirit of Christmas was also the spirit of generosity, the spirit of charitable giving, the spirit to reaching out to someone and helping them on their way.
In 1842, Dickens was moved by a report in Parliament on the employment and condition of children in mines and manufactories. Dickens was appalled by what he read in the report, all the more so after he himself went down in an English coal mine to see the conditions for himself. In response, Dickens' first plan was to write a political pamphlet, an appeal to the people of England on behalf of the poor man's child. But then he struck upon the idea that a compelling piece of fiction might get into more hearts and minds than a pamphlet would. He decided to write a short novel, A Christmas Carol, a particular kind of story, the gist of which he hints at in the preface.
I have endeavored in this ghostly little book to raise the ghost of an idea which shall not put my readers out of humor with themselves, with each other, with the season, or with me. May it haunt their houses pleasantly.
A Christmas Carol is a ghost story, and the first ghost to appear is Scrooge's former business partner. Here again, Charles Packard.
Scrooge leaves work late on Christmas Eve and goes home. What you get to learn about him from Dickens' descriptions of the room is that he lives alone. He is not using his wealth to make himself comfortable or happy in any way, and Marley arrives.
I am here tonight to warn you that you may yet have a chance, a hope of escaping my fate.
You have this incredibly frightening ghost with these chains and the howling and the passing through the door. That's the first crack in Scrooge. He's a little bit frightened, and frightened isn't something that a man that hardened is accustomed to feeling. But we get to see him just start to crack. Really, it's step one in a 12-step program. He has to admit that he has a problem. And that's not easy to do with a guy like Scrooge. By the end of the scene, Scrooge might maybe admit that he might have a problem.
You will be haunted by three spirits. Without their visits, you cannot hope to shun the path that I tread. Expect the first tomorrow night when the bell tolls one.
Couldn't I take them all at once and have it over, Jacob?
Expect the second on the next night at the same hour. The third upon the next night when the last stroke of 12 has ceased to vibrate. Look to see me no more, and look that for your own sake. Remember what has passed between us.
We'll continue our reading of Dickens' Christmas Carol with the cast from the Aurora Fox Theater's production. After more music from Dickens' time, here's a familiar Christmas melody from the year 1850. Christmas music from Victorian England, played by the Westminster Concert Bell Choir. Richard Storr's Willis's It Came Upon the Midnight Clear. You're listening to Charles Dickens and the Spirit of Christmas from Colorado Public Radio, and we're back in the company of Ebenezer Scrooge, now with the ghost of Christmas Past.
Do you know this place?
Know it? Why, I was apprenticed here.
Christmas Past, her tactic is to show Scrooge what he was like before his heart changed. And she uses scenes from various Christmases.
Oh, why look, it's old Fezziwig. Bless his heart, it's Fezziwig alive again. What an employer he was. Everyone loved Fezziwig.
No more work tonight, boys. It's Christmas Eve. Now clear away, my lads, and let's have a lot of room here. Hilly-ho, Dick! Cheer up, Ebenezer!
Merry Christmas, Mr. Fezziwig!
Merry Christmas, Mrs. Fezziwig! Time to dance!
Find a partner, everyone!
We see Scrooge start to want to participate in the party at Fezziwig's house and to hug people on the street. But there's no argument. His heart has already changed, and past shows him that.
No, Scrooge cannot escape his past so easily. But with this scene at least suggesting a more festive mood, it's a good time to explain a philosophy that Charles Dickens developed after writing A Christmas Carol. He called it his Carol philosophy.
So for Dickens, Christmas was, as described by him, a good time, a kind, forgiving, charitable, pleasant time. The only time I know of in the long calendar of the year when men and women seem by one consent to open their shut-up hearts freely and to think of other people below them as if they really were fellow passengers to the grave and not another race of creatures bound on other journeys. So that is the Carol philosophy. And Dickens literally, at the end of his life, started touring his one-man production of A Christmas Carol throughout Europe, and then he came to America to spread the philosophy. Part of it was to support himself, but the other part of it was to share this idea of how Christmas could heal the world as far and wide as he could share it.
So all of this talk that, to some degree, our current notion of what Christmas is and represents beyond the story from the Bible, mm-hmm. we really can legitimately thank Charles Dickens for?
Yeah, a lot of the ways that we celebrate Christmas were repopularized by A Christmas Carol. And after he wrote A Christmas Carol and started becoming enchanted by his own carol philosophy, he wrote other Christmas books in subsequent years. There's a total of 5 Christmas books, A Cricket in the Hearth and several others. And so he brought back all of these ways to celebrate. And also at the same time, some of the traditions were beginning. Christmas cards also started in the mid-1800s. The Christmas tree was something that had started to fall away that Dickens brought back into popularity. The sort of being in the living room together and playing games and celebrating and sharing food and gifts of oranges and candy and things like that that people did for one another were repopularized by Dickens. They had fallen away in the soot of industry.
And one other example of something that came about as a result of A Christmas Carol, some dance music, a set of tunes composed and dedicated to Charles Dickens, Esquire, by Edwin Marriott, the Christmas Carol Quadrilles. The quadrille is a dance for 4 couples, a dance easily imagined at the Fezziwigs' Christmas party in Scrooge's past. You're listening to Charles Dickens and the Spirit of Christmas from Colorado Public Radio. This year, the 200th anniversary of Charles Dickens' birth, and we're walking through Dickens' life and his Christmas Carol with the help of the cast and crew of the Aurora Fox Theater in Aurora, Colorado, bringing us back to the story, director Charles Packard.
Christmas Present is as close to a Santa Claus character as we ever get in the show, and his job is to show Scrooge that life has gone on without him, and Christmas is still happening. And Scrooge, you are missing it.
Oh, a wonderful pudding. My darling Mrs. Cratchit, I believe this to be your greatest success since our marriage.
Oh, what a relief.
A Merry Christmas to us all, my dears. God bless us.
God bless us, everyone.
Spirit, tell me if Tiny Tim will live.
I see a vacant seat in the poor chimney corner, and a crutch without an owner, carefully preserved. If these shadows remain unaltered by the future, the child will die.
No, no. Oh, no, kind spirit, say he will be spared.
So you see a big crack open in Scrooge there, but he's not done. And sort of the 1-2 punch, next present reveals 2 more children that are called Want and Ignorance. I am no Dickens scholar, but from what I understand, he's writing a reaction to changes in the poor law. Want and ignorance are representation of children in London at that time that are suffering terribly. Christmas Present is basically saying, here's the cost of your work.
And this point may be all the more poignant thanks to something that was not known to Dickens fans in his own lifetime. Dramaturg Brenda Rittenour.
Well, it's no secret that Dickens wrote about the poor people of London throughout his career. What was a secret through his whole lifetime was that he himself had been at the bottom of that barrel. When he was 12 years old, his father was sent to debtor's prison. After a time, his mother and his other siblings joined his father there, and Charles Dickens was sent to Warren's bootblacking factory to paste the labels on pots of bootblacking, which to a boy who has had aspirations of becoming educated, who has really seen himself in his head as a gentleman, this was the worst possible turn his life could have taken. So when Dickens writes about poor children and about the poor people of London, he is writing directly out of sitting on that stool in that bootblacking factory and feeling the shame and the burden of being poor in that time.
A visit from one more Christmas ghost coming up after another Christmas carol from Dickens' time, from the year 1818, Silent Night. Franz Gruber's Silent Night, an arrangement there by English composer John Rutter, sung by the Bach Choir with the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra. You're listening to Charles Dickens and the Spirit of Christmas from Colorado Public Radio, and we've reached the point in our telling of A Christmas Carol where Ebenezer Scrooge is visited by one last ghost of Christmas.
There is nothing Christmassy about the Ghost of Christmas Future. The look is very much a classic Grim Reaper look. The way that ghost communicates is very much the classic Grim Reaper style. He is absolutely terrifying.
Am I in the presence of the Ghost of Christmas yet to come?
Ghost of the Future? I fear you more than any other specter I have seen. But as I know your promise is to do me good, and as I hope to live to be another man from what I was, I am prepared to bear you company and do it with a thankful heart. Lead on, spirit. The night is waning fast, and it is precious time to me, I know.
Future doesn't speak. So Future shows Scrooge a mundane little meeting of three or four businessmen. He recognizes these guys, and on most days he would be there at the same time, but he's not. Doesn't get what the clue is. Future raises the stakes. He shows them what we refer to as the haggler's scene. This is a back alley Victorian version of a pawn shop, basically. Several people have scavenged some belongings and have come to old Joe to sell them. These things have come from a dead guy. That starts to bother Scrooge. Future raises the stakes again. We meet a young couple, John and Caroline. And in this very brief passage, we realize that John and Caroline are behind in their mortgage, and John has gone to talk to Scrooge. When he got there to talk to Scrooge to beg for his home, Scrooge was dead. And that's wonderful news. This starts to really upset Scrooge, and he begs Future, show me some tenderness connected with a death. Okay. Future gently guides him, and we realize that we're at the Cratchit's house. Tiny Tim has died. The family is heartbroken and really thankful that they had him for as little time as they did. They had him for a while. This is the tenderness connected with a death that Scrooge asked for. And it was exactly the right piece of tenderness to finish breaking him open. Immediately, Future ushers him away from that scene. We arrive in a graveyard. Future indicates a particular tombstone. Scrooge goes to it. This is nonsense. He doesn't understand. What are you showing me? I don't understand the clue until his own name is revealed on the tombstone. And in a classic hitting bottom moment, all of the clues and all of the evidence that these people have given him and all of the ways they've asked him to change, suddenly all clicks.
Oh no, spirit. Oh no, no, spirit. Hear me, I am not the man I was. I will not be the man I must have been, but for all I have seen. Why show me this if I am past all hope? Good spirit, assure me that I yet may change these shadows you have shown me by an altered life. I will honor Christmas in my heart, try to keep it all the year. I will live in the past, the present, and the future. The spirits of all three shall strive within me. I will not shut out the lessons that they teach.
A moment later, he wakes up in his own apartment, in his own bed, with his own bed curtains. And the walls actually seem solid, and there is light outside, and he is a completely changed man.
You there, boy!
What's today, my fine fellow?
Today? Why, Christmas Day!
Oh, it's Christmas Day! I haven't missed it.
Do you know the Poulterers in the next street at the corner?
I should hope I did.
Do you know whether they've sold the prize turkey that was hanging in the window?
You mean the one as big as me?
What a delightful boy. Yes, that's the one.
It's hanging there now.
Go and buy it, and tell them to bring it here. Come back with the man, and I'll give you a shilling. Come back with him in less than 5 minutes, and I'll give you half a crown.
Yes, sir.
I'll send it to Bob Cratchit's. He shan't know who sends it. It's twice the size of Tiny Tim.
And with that, the story is almost over. We'll wrap up our look at Charles Dickens and the spirit of Christmas after one more carol from Dickens' time, first appearing in a publication in 1833, Christmas Carols Ancient and Modern, The First Noel. Musica Sacra, led by Richard Westenberg, and an ancient English Christmas carol, The First Noel. This is Charles Dickens and the Spirit of Christmas from Colorado Public Radio. And some final thoughts now on the enduring legacy of A Christmas Carol from the Aurora Fox Theater's Brenda Ritenour and Charles Packard.
You can't have a Christmas, it seems, without at least one production of A Christmas Carol. I think last year or several years ago, there were 7 productions in the greater Denver area. So it's something that people need. I mean, it certainly is tradition. It certainly speaks to how we as a culture celebrate the holiday, going out to the theater and sitting together in a room and hearing a story that is a familiar story. And it all comes down to God bless us, everyone.
And as Tiny Tim observed, God bless us, everyone.
God bless us, everyone. And it's incredibly cliche. It's used over and over again to the point that we don't even really know what it means. But when you get to that line and Tiny Tim says it, we all know Tiny Tim's going to say it at the end of the show. We all know Tiny Tim doesn't die. And that's why we came to see the show. We all believe for that moment that we have everything to be thankful for.
Nearly 170 years now since the publication of A Christmas Carol and 200 years since the birth of Charles Dickens, the influence of his carol philosophy goes on. You've been listening to Charles Dickens and the Spirit of Christmas from Colorado Public Radio. Hearty thanks to Charles Packard and Brenda Ritenour for their insights through the hour, and to cast members from the Aurora Fox Theater's 2012 production of A Christmas Carol. The production used a script adapted from Dickens' novel by David and Julie Payne, with original music by Martha Yordi. The cast included Gregory Price as Ebenezer Scrooge, his nephew Fred was Drew Hirschbeck, Bob Cratchit was played by Troy Lakey, Mrs. Cratchit, Jada Roberts, Tiny Tim, was played by Adeline Elo, Marley by Hugo Jean Sales, Christmas Past, Chloe Nosan, Christmas Present, Parrish Worsfold, Mr. Fezziwig was Robert Michael Sanders. Mrs. Fezziwig was Megan Wakely. Our narrator was Jack Kasperson. And last but not least, Turkey Boy, Berkeley Blanchard. Thanks also to Michelle, Wolf, Paul, and the original Dickens Carolers for some good cheer to start us off at the beginning of the hour. I'm John Pino, and in the words of Charles Dickens, I wish you cheerful views, jolly good temper, papers always in season, and a vein of glowing, hearty, generous, mirthful, beaming reference in everything to home and fireside. And one more old, lusty English Christmas ballad to close the hour, predating Dickens by more than 100 years, actually. Here's the Baltimore Consort with the Shropshire Wakes, or Hey for Christmas. Thanks for listening.
Once a year when we have cakes for them.